Thank you, ma'am, and good morning to Vice Chancellor, sir, and everyone present there. And I hope I am audible. If ever the connection snaps off, please let me know. I think one of the effects of the post-corona we are witnessing is that we are all becoming tech-savvy. So the subject relates both to the present and the future. What are going to be the effects, or what are the effects that we see post-COVID crisis? The thing is, the crisis is still going on, so partly it also relates to what we may yet see. Now, as human beings, we have two ways of looking into the future. One is the eye of faith, which we have lost, and the other is the eye of wisdom, which we are yet to acquire. So in between the two, our life hangs, and we try to navigate through reason and try to understand what could be, what it could be, what could be the effects. And we are seeing, one of the things that we are seeing today, among many other things which we shall quickly come to, is the the inadequacy of reason to really understand fully, comprehensively, and integrally about anything. Let's take a simple thing like virus. You know, I was just noting that what happened 100 years back when there was Spanish flu. Now, if you go to the Spanish flu era, if you go to the Black Death plague time in 13th century, you will see the same measures as we are advocating today, social distancing and masks. Now, it is very strange that in 100 years we haven't figured out or found out a better way. I mean, this is a good thing to do, but it also reflects the inadequacy of our reason, observation, of a science which is focused in one direction. And probably this crisis is a way and means to remind us that there are ways of looking at things, at phenomena, which we need to explore and discover. Now, since we are talking about it in the light of Sri Aurobindo, so Sri Aurobindo and the mother, during the flu epidemic, they spoke about it very extensively. And they could look as yogis behind the phenomena, and they spoke that what really a virus is, it's the crystallization of a kind of bad will, crystallization of a suggestion and of fear. And so they cautioned everyone that if you are afraid, this is going to cascade. And we see this happening. But the role of things like fear, faith are still a far cry from our present understanding of human disease, because we are still turned too much outward. Let's take another example, more concrete. This is an example in the psychological domain, but more concrete. So we are still focusing on vaccine, we are still focusing on drugs and medicines, but we have not yet figured out a concrete way. Of course, there are a lot of suggestions, take this medicine, that medicine, of how to really boost our immunity, because ultimately the battle is fought not at a socio-political level, but in the level of the body. And our body must find ways and means by which it can ward off this and many other diseases. And here again, we have beautiful insight from Sri Aurobindo and the mother, where they say that the body's immunity is dependent on two things. One is a physical condition, and physical condition, when they spoke about it, they spoke about, let's say, if there is a lot of fatigue. Now, this is well known that if there is a lot of fatigue, if we don't take adequate nutrition, if our sleep is bad, then body immunity takes a hit. But there is also a psychological condition, a state of faith, cheerfulness, generally a very positive disposition. It creates another kind of envelope around us which protects us. And it's known that people can be in the midst of epidemics and not get affected. So what really helps? We don't know. I mean, scientifically, so to say. But with the yogic vision, they have spoken about it. And I think there should be a proper study in that direction. And my own feeling is that science is going to take a turn in that direction sooner or later, regardless of whatever, outer interventions we speak about. And if we can do that, we may discover a whole wealth of knowledge, a treasure house of knowledge, not only with regard to this virus epidemic, but in our whole understanding of diseases. After all, ultimately, the disease, who is the end person, is the patient. It is not the doctor, it is not the drugs. And we need to discover ways and means by which the human body can give a good fight back. And why not? Nature has endowed it with a good immune system. And if we go back in far back times, well, one did fight a number of things with this immune system. So I think we have to recover that ability. And this is the direction of research which will take place, not only on vaccines, but our innate ways of boosting our immunity with or without physical means. Both we can use, but this is one direction. The other thing that one can see very clearly is that this thing has created a kind of inward shift. Now, by inward shift, I mean sometimes the same thing is happening, but we have to understand it differently. Let's take, for example, we are being advocated social isolation, though a more correct term would be physical isolation, because social isolation has other connotations. But both yogically and physiologically and physically, it is true that if we go to crowded places, we are not just going into a, mass of human beings, but a mass of vibrations. So we don't yet look at life as a law of vibrations, the mass of forces which are impacting upon us. Common example being if we go to a market with a friend and we are just giving company, but we end up having a desire to buy something because we don't understand that we are constantly bathed in a sea of vibrations of all kinds. And this is another thing we have to understand, that why going to crowded places harms us. It's not just about the contagion. There is another contagion. What I mean is that there is a psychological contagion, even an occult contagion, a spiritual contagion, which we need to become aware of and possibly use it. So the entire material paradigm through which we have worked out and up till this moment for the last over 1,000 years, the whole study has been to dig deep, deep, deep into matter, right into its depths. And I think material science has already reached a point where it's staring at a void and wanting to take a leap. What lies beyond the last particles? And a similar leap for quite some time, I have been wondering when it will come in the medical science. So I think this is the moment when a leap can come and we can look beyond the material understanding of diseases where we have viruses and cells, but something which is called as cellular consciousness, consciousness of a virus, the vibrations that constitute us. And this is the moment. Now, whether we'll take that leap or not is a different thing altogether, I'm sure, sooner or later. But there is an inward shift. We are finding new ways of connecting with each other, not just physically. Another thing which is very interesting, and I find this webinar itself is a wonderful opportunity to explore that life is being organized in such a way that the boundaries of institutions, institutions were physical structures. Now they are becoming more and more subtle structures. They exist, but where do they exist? Is it something on ground or is it on another dimension, like money, which, olden times we carried money in the pocket. Now we carry a plastic card in the pocket, and it's a big shift. It may look very simple. It may, we may not understand its full implication, but it means that humanity is going to become more and more subtilized, more subjective in its understanding. I mean, it may take us some time to reach that point, but the step is being taken. So in future, if you have to really think about it, schools, colleges, learning, the whole mode is going to change, and it should change more than physical. And look at it, how many best people we can access through such means. So it's not just a physical dimension, which is all right. We need that some kind of physical dimension. But more and more, we are going to depend on other dimensions, other aspects, and a kind of much more plastic and flexible structure of life is going to emerge post this virus thing. So this is one part of it. But another part is that when reason tries to project what may happen, we invariably fail, almost invariably. If you read the books that were written in 1940s about what's going to happen, nobody could have projected that places like Germany and Japan are going to come back in such a massive way. I mean, they were almost demolished. We see this kind of it. Now, why this happens? This happens because there are intervention of forces which we may not reckon right now, but which are there. They are active in this world, and they change the complete future course of things. So this is how we have to understand that when we try to project the world based on the basis of reason, I mean, 5 years back, we all made different plans. I had a plan to travel and all of us had different plans. It all collapses because something new and unexpected comes. And this new and unexpected, the anomalous, if we like, the unwanted, if we like, actually can open the door to a new understanding of our life and of world existence. So this is how we have to look at it. But what should be our attitude? You know, this is something which I draw a lot of inspiration from, that 100 years back when the First World War was going on and Spanish flu, much worse than what we are experiencing now. And let us hope it doesn't go to that level. So Spanish flu was raging all through. I mean, it was misnomed as Spanish flu. Its origin was somewhere else, possibly again China, Japan or somewhere. And it spread, detected in Spain. So during that time, when the world was completely caught up in the grip of all kinds of fear, anger, aggression, hatred, all kinds of forces, if we look at Sri Aurobindo, what was Sri Aurobindo really engaged in? He was engaged like, Bhagirath, that on one side you have the dead corpse of the past world. On the other side, like Bhagirath, he was busy bringing down the Ganges, which is going to redeem mankind. So when darkness is dense and, we find that we can't understand, we can't figure out, what is the way out, then we must make a leap of faith and look to the dawn that is coming. That's a wonderful lesson which I always keep in mind, that how Sri Aurobindo during the First World War and equally during the Second World War, when he was directly engaged, he was intervening with all the subtle and spiritual and occult forces at his beck and call to turn the tide of war in favor of the Allies. And during that time, how could somebody be looking past the darkness, looking past the collapse of civilization towards a new creation? Hello, am I audible? Hello? Hello? Yes. So I'll just read out a couple of passages, which are very inspiring, and that should be our attitude. On one side, we can look at the mud which is down below. On the other side, we can look at the seeds of lotus which will spring. And all darkness, if we take Sri Aurobindo's view, then all destruction is basically a prelude to new creation. And we have this in Indian mythology, Balram, the elder brother, he comes first with his plowshare and then Sri Krishna comes. Or if we take another story where the titans come and they need the earth. So all this we are witnessing today is a preparation, and humanity is being prepared, it's being kneaded, it's being churned. And when it is churned, we see that the Kalkut wish, the poison comes, and then we have the Amrit. So there is a very interesting letter of Sri Aurobindo where he says, basically he was asked that everybody is speaking about Pralaya. So again we see, we have this tendency in the Indian context at least, because we have heard about Pralaya, so immediately we rush to Pralaya. Now Pralaya is not a solution. Pralaya means if civilization collapses, it's okay, we build up again, but do we even imagine how much pain, struggle, maybe a 10,000 years, a lakh years wasted in all this effort? So when this was asked to Sri Aurobindo, that all the great thinkers are talking about the end of the world, and what are your views about it? So Sri Aurobindo had this to say: even if all smashed, I would look beyond the smash to the new creation. As for what is happening in the world, it does not upset me, because I knew all along that things would happen in that fashion. So what is it that we see today, all these things which are happening, they are pulverizing the earth, our matter, our very bodies are being pulverized. All this is happening so that something new and beautiful can emerge. And some of us are, of course, looking only in the direction of the disease, the problem, the fear and all this. But there are people who must look beyond it into the new creation. Now, it's here that, this letter continues and he says that I know this is a time of trouble for you and everybody. It is so for the whole world. Looks like, you know, he's writing today. Confusion, trouble, disorder and upset everywhere is the general state of things. The better things that are to come are preparing or growing under a veil, and the worse are prominent everywhere. The one thing is to hold on and to hold out till the hour of light has come. So I suppose the important thing here is, so we can look at it in two ways. One is, as I said, a very material rational paradigm where there is always uncertainty. There is no way that reason can ever completely predict what's going to happen. But the other way to look at it is that there is a wisdom, as you know, it is said in the ancient scriptures, Pragya Prasutto Purano, that has gone into creation. And while the world is grappling with this, and we are also part of that, it's also important to align with this wisdom, to try to understand what is the message that it is trying to tell us. Now, one of the messages which is very evident, which I think most people are talking about, but how far and how long we'll remember, is that we need to deal with earth and the creatures with a lot more compassion. This is something which is very, very obvious. It doesn't need much deeper insight to understand that we have treated earth and the creatures, the animals and everything, as if they are meant only for a pleasure. There is a whole philosophy of life that says that, you know, all the animals and even plants for that matter are meant only for our consumption and our enjoyment and pleasure. But perhaps we need to rethink that there is a deeper connectivity, interconnectedness in life. And if we miss out on this truth and just go on leading a life the way we have been leading, then, you know, why one crisis will move from one to another? If we really look last 15 years, this is what has been happening. There have been a series of crises. SARS, then many others, Ebola, MERS, one after another, initially HIV. Now Corona. So, you know, basically it is compelling us to understand there is something wrong in our way of dealing with world, with nature, with each other, with animals, with plants. We are right now dealing with things purely on a very unconscious basis, or a purely on the basis of our selfish interest. What gratifies me, the consumerism and everything else, and I need not talk about it, it's too well known. But perhaps we have to now deal with life a lot more consciously. We have to look at animals with a different vision. They are part of us. They are not something else. We have to look at plant life and even material earthly life as it's an extension of us. And we are an extension of it. We can't deny this truth which steers us right from material science to every other level. But we have been denying it as if we are independent, separate entities who are here only for our own, fun. So these are the thoughts which this epidemic is stirring in the minds of people. And from what I understand, and have been in contact with a number of people, humanity is taking two roads. One is those who are beginning to learn the lessons, see the message, and they are growing in consciousness. Last 1 year or even 6 months, there is such a deep spiritual thirst in mankind which is waking up, because people are discovering there are three things which the crisis has brought home to us. One is the fact of death and the fear of death. Now, death is a reality at one level. It's a total non-reality at another level. But for us who live still so much in the senses, with the Deh-Atma-Bodh, it says reality that stares. And it induces fear. Why? Because we think that death of the physical body, its disintegration, is the end of our existence. Now, when we stare at it, when several times this fact comes, stares at our face, a day would come when, you know, we would look into its eyes and say, "Who are you?" Now, I remember once, you know, Swami Vivekananda's story, very inspiring story, that he was, I think it was a railway platform where he had got up and he was walking, and suddenly one monkey started chasing him. So initially he wanted to quite naturally escape the monkey. But then the leonine personality that he was, he suddenly turned back and looked at the monkey and said, "Who are you? After all, I am a man. Here is a monkey." And the monkey, it was time for monkey to go away. So anything that scares us, we must try to understand what is its true nature. It's time to reflect What really is death? Is it the end of our existence? Or is it a new beginning? Not just in terms of our writings and belief systems, but as a real fact. So when we stare into its eyes, it will yield its secret to us. When we are no more afraid, then we have the courage to look deeper than the immediate phenomena. So this is one aspect which, this crisis is bringing us face to face. And while some people will run away from the monkey chasing them or the shadow chasing them, others will turn back and look at the shadow and realize, well, it's nothing else but my own shadow. And with the light, it will vanish. Second thing which this crisis is bringing us face to face is the fragility of human existence. Now, this is something we know. Again, it's there in the scriptural, lot of scriptures. But when we confront it in a mass scale, when we understand that it takes nothing, just a few months for a whole world to come to its knees, all our economics and everything. So when we are confronted with fragility, again, we can make one of the two responses. One is that we become cynics, we are filled with despair, frightened and full of gloom. Or we can look again at all this fragile, collapsing world and say that there must be something which is stable, deep, enduring, something which is true, something real, something worth living for. And we hold on to that. And this is the third thing which we see happening. And this third thing is it's something which we don't really understand this way, but the illusion of progress. Now, we have progressed along one dimension. As I said, we have progressed along the dimension of even materially. In several dimensions, we have progressed, but in several ways, we have progressed, but mainly keeping in focus the material dimension. Now, psychological dimension, we have not progressed as a human race the way we should have. We have, for example, we can cross the barriers of sound. We can cross the, we have entered into other galaxies, or probably we'll enter very soon in terms of spacecrafts. We can go to other planets, we can go to moon, but we have not accessed the inner spaces. We have not crossed them. So when this kind of a lopsided development takes place, then we have to get back, and all that we thought is a great progress collapses right in front of us. So when this illusion of progress that we have, I'm not saying that this illusion is like a non-existent, certainly not. There is progress. But if we think this is the real progress and this is the only progress, then that's where the illusion comes. So this progress, outer progress, must also be commensurate with an inner progress. And that's where we must focus upon. To come to the final point, what Sri Aurobindo has said, he said that all these crises that we are facing today and will yet face in the near future are at their bottom evolutionary crisis. And this is what we have been talking about, that we have two ways. We can adapt and evolve as human beings. Not in terms of, again, reliance on systems, government, legislature, technology and paraphernalia. All that is okay. That's one of the things. But not the real thing. So when we are faced with the challenge that life gives to us, we can either adapt and evolve. Or we can collapse and go back to the old ways. History of evolution is witness to this fact. That whenever there was a crisis, the mud fish, we know how miserable creature it is, neither belonging to land nor to the sea. But suddenly something happens and this mudfish, the fish through the mudfish graduates into a wonderful creature of the land. So this is how we have to understand that this crisis is coming to push us through a narrow door, and we have a choice. And as Sri Aurobindo says, concealed in this choice is the choice of our destiny. We can either fall back to the old ways, which means we go back to more medicines, more vaccines, more microscopes, more everything, more hospitals, more and more of this outer paraphernalia. Or we can once for all take the leap that why are we so fragile? What really is death? Why can't we face the tiniest of organism upon earth? Is there something within my own cells of which I am not aware? Can my cells, belonging to a much more conscious organism, cannot stand against a virus which is driven by unconscious forces? Now, the way to do it is, of course, a whole yoga, but essentially it is to replace all that is unconscious in us with consciousness. and there is a whole world which is unconscious in us. Our very breathing, heartbeat, everything, you know, happens mechanically. And perhaps this is the direction that we must take, what Sri Aurobindo and the mother spoke about as the spiritual evolution. And they foresaw all this. And they saw that, you know, in humanity there will be a stratification. And there are those who will be ready to take a leap. This is the evolutionary crisis, as I said. Something similar to what the apes must have experienced in the jungles. Something similar to what the most uncomfortable creature called Archaeopteryx, which is neither a creature of land nor a bird. It is neither a reptile nor the bird, must have felt very odd, very strange, miserable. And yet, one day it began to fly. So I think today we have this. And you know, when I say this, there is a hope particularly for one kind of humanity. Those who believe that they know everything by the mental processes, because, you know, we have studied a lot and we have gone to big universities. This is a big problem because, you know, we are like that best monkey who doesn't want to take a leap. But on the other hand, there are those who are like the mudfish or the Archaeopteryx or the ugly duckling or the black sheep. They are neither here nor there. They're looking for a new way, something new, something better, something higher. It doesn't matter what name we put it. And they are the ones who are ready for the leap. So I think this whole crisis is pushing us in that direction. Whether we'll take a leap of faith, whether we'll use it to turn it into a means, a catalyst for a further spiritual evolution, or we'll go back to the old ways, that is still something drawn behind the curtain. But one thing is for sure, that if we don't learn our lessons, as children, when they don't learn, they are kept back in the same class. We have to face it again and again, and unfortunately in more and more intense ways. So with this little note, that all this is basically going to serve as a feeder for the spiritual evolution of the race, just as waste products also serve as a feeder for a plant to spring out of the soil. So it looks like waste. We look like, you know, we see death dancing all around. We see fear, which is having literally a fun party at our expense. And all this we see happening, the collapsing world. But at the same time, all this can feed the spiritual aspiration, not an otherworldly spiritual aspiration, because I'm not talking of this Mayavad that, you know, all this is illusion. Let's find some nirvana. No. But to awaken within us something new, something unprecedented, something which can even transmute our very cells and bring out of them just, you know, new and divine possibility, just as now we have human possibilities emerging out of the animal cell and the plant cell. So with this note, that that this is all, this is probably the prelude to a long process which is going to continue, wherein we make choices to evolve into a spiritual evolution, not just intellectually, not just emotionally, psychically, but even physically, so that our very body can receive and hold the spiritual consciousness. With this beautiful note of hope, I would like to close. And if there are any questions, please, I'll be happy to take them. Thank you.